Can you grieve at work? How much time should you really take to process your emotions? And what about dating when your heart is still healing? What are the rules there? Grab a glass of wine and settle in as we chat with Rebecca Feingloss, the powerhouse founder of Grieve Leave. She's on a mission to change the conversation about grief in the workplace through education, policy shifts, and real advocacy for those who are grieving.
We dive into a lighthearted yet deeply heartfelt discussion about love, romance, and how grief reshapes what we really want from relationships. Ready to talk about grief, love, and everything in between? Let's get into it.
Welcome to the Two Girls with Grief podcast, the podcast where we share our real and raw experiences with grief. Whether it's tears or laughter, or maybe a little bit of both, we're here to figure it out in real time. We are your hosts. I'm Kendall Rogers.
And I'm Rachel Dwyer.
And while we're not professionals, we are professional grievers.
Every Tuesday, we bring you honest conversations that break down the stigma of grief, one episode at a time, because no one should have to grieve alone. So grab a cup of coffee, settle in, and let's navigate this journey together. Welcome, Rebecca. We're so excited to have you. We've been following your journey on social media. And when we first reached out, I was like, oh, it's actually way more relevant to things that we talk about and like what you're doing and your story. So we're so excited to have you on and to talk to you about grief and grief leave and all things grief.
Well, thank you so much for having me, y'all. I'm so excited. It's great to connect with both of you. I love talking about all things grief, and Grieve Leave came out of a lot of grief, and it's cool to see where it's come to now. And I'm thinking about y'all at the beginning of your podcasting journey, and I'm like, ooh, what are you going to be doing 5 years from now?
We're going to use you for inspiration. So as we hear your story, we'll be taking notes for our own journey as well. So a little bit about Rebecca. So Rebecca Feingloss is a certified grief support specialist, a startup founder, and former state and local policy advisor. Rebecca founded Grieve Leave in 2021 as a way to document her experience on a year-long sabbatical and process her own grief. Rebecca has been featured in LA Times, Fortune, Time, HuffPost, Slate, and Elle, and she's become the go-to resource for grieving. So we're so excited for this conversation. And like I said, we're going to be taking notes because we would love to be featured in all those places as well.
We need all the voices.
Yeah. Any insider tips you got in this conversation, we'll be taking them down.
Works for me.
So as fellow grievers, do you mind sharing a little bit about your mom and your dad and your grief experience? Like, I kind of say this tongue in cheek, but kind of bring them in life for our listeners and I don't know what makes them special and what you love about them.
Oh my gosh. I love talking about my parents, Kendall. Where to even begin? So Mark and Susan Feingloss are my parents. We were actually talking before we started recording about the fact that I split my time now in Montreal and have been in the frigid cold for months with my new baby nephew. But that's because my mom was from there. So she was Canadian and my parents met at McGill. So they met in college in Montreal. And my brother still lives there, or my brother lives there now and met a wife and fell in love. And he's not a Southerner anymore. But my parents moved down to North Carolina when my dad started his residency at Duke University. So he was a physician and my mom ran the medical center library. My parents were brilliant. I mean, they were just absolutely brilliant. And my mom was 5'10". My dad says he was 5'10 and a half, but I don't think that's true. I think he was also 5'10". And they each had just a brilliant sense of humor. My mom, I hear, she had a dry sense of humor, but was also like so welcoming and such a strong leader. And my dad, I think, was nerdier than my mom, though. I mean, they were both kind of nerds, which is really sweet. But I wish I had gotten to know my mom better. I wish I had had the chance. She died when I was very young of brain cancer. And my dad, I got to know so much better just as a man and as a person. He was my best friend up to the day he died. He shared a love of Duke basketball, which this time of year means I get to think about him a lot. Every time I go to a Duke game, every time I watch Duke basketball, I think of my dad. I could tell you a million and one things about both of them, but I think like key points are that my dad was really focused on service as a doctor. My mom was also really like artistic. I keep like art of hers all over my condo. And then a fun fact about my dad is he was a physician, but he also collected rocks and minerals and was like world renowned for it. And I keep like a few really special pieces that I could get into, but we donated his mineral collection to Harvard when he died
because it
it's really robust and incredibly important scientifically. So brilliant people. I'm half Canadian. And big Duke fans. Maybe that's like, those are the key points about my parents. Amazing people.
I feel like you really brought them to life. And this is something we're trying to do in each episode because I feel like you don't realize how often you don't get to talk about them and like how they're so important. And we never talk about them because people don't ask.
Oh my God. Yeah. Or like I spent a lot of time writing early on in my year of grief leave, my grief sabbatical. Spent some time around my mom's birthday that year, which is in April, writing about her instead of writing about her death. Because I think, like, as a griever, I spent so much of my childhood navigating, like, what it was like to have a parent who was dying of brain cancer. And then as a young adult or as a teen and then a young adult, it was like, what has it been like navigating life after your mom dies of brain cancer? And because I was so little, I didn't get to know who she was. So I spent so much time talking to people who knew her, researching more about her career. And she wrote a book when she was 30 on like internet search engines. I should have said that first. She like pioneered internet search engines early in like the medical community and library science. And so she was like teaching classes on how to search for things. But those were the parts of my mom that I didn't talk about. I didn't talk about her sense of humor because the conversation would always be around how she died. And so it is so important. And I'm very touched that you invited my parents into this space because it's like, great. I can talk about who they were and why they were special to me and like the exciting, wonderful parts about them. I feel like my mom would be pissed if I only just talked about her cancer forever. Like, that's not who she was. Yeah. That's how she died.
That's such a beautiful way to put it. And just listening to your story and how you deal with it, I think it's so important. I have a friend that he lost a wife and he has a young daughter, and hearing about how you still keep her alive in your life and honor her, I think is so important. And it's hard when people don't talk about it, right? Like, it's hard to know like what is the best way to make sure someone stays alive and their memory stays alive. And even like, I didn't lose my parents super young, but I still have a hard time doing that. And I think as a younger person, like you said, like you wish you got to know your mom better. I think that's even harder because your memories fade even more so, and you don't get to know them as like more of an adult. Because as you get older, you get to see more parts of your parents, right? You get to see more of them, learn more about them. And I think the more conversations we can have, it'll make it easier for other people because everyone's going to lose somebody. But the more we have these conversations, it'll help someone else going through a similar situation figure out like, maybe this is the way to go, or maybe I can try this, or I can do that, because it's hard and all grief is different. And I feel like your situation is very unique in a way, and having someone else go through it, it's like, you don't know what to say to someone. I haven't dealt with that specific, you know, loss or scenario. So yeah, I think these conversations, it's always good because you can relate in so many ways, whether it's you or somebody that you know that's going through something similar.
Totally. You made me think of one idea, and like maybe it's a little nugget of advice, but I also think this is something a lot of people do. Maybe we don't think about it as a way of honoring our person, though. I wear a lot of my mom's jewelry and scarves and like her old clothes, but particularly her scarves. I don't have any on today, but I have like, I'm always putting if it's been a couple days since I've washed my hair, I'll put my hair in a low pony and I wear one of her silk scarves that I have like a rainbow of. She wore many of them when she was going through cancer, and she would cover her head with them. Oh, that's gonna make me cry. Ooh.
Oh, and we so cry now, quite frequently. Yeah.
Great.
Tears are welcome.
Thanks. But it's like, when I wear those and someone compliments them, compliments a piece of jewelry, I want to talk about my mom. Like, I want to use that as a conversation starter, a conversation opener. I will always tell people, oh, this was my mom's. And sometimes they'll say, oh, was your mom's?
Yeah.
And then I get to like tell a little bit more or talk about what happened or talk about who she was and her style. But man, wearing your person's stuff or wearing things or having things around that remind you of your person, that is a beautiful way to keep them alive. And I don't know that we always think about it that way, but anything that invites conversation about our people, we keep them alive by talking about them and by remembering them and by sharing stories about them. So we can like trigger those opportunities for conversation with the right accessories.
Kendall lost her dad. So I don't know if Kendall wears any of her dad's stuff, but I definitely wear the things that I can of like my sister. I have some things of my mom's and like bags and stuff. Like I like purses, but I'm not like a fancy purse person. So like all the fancy purses I have right now are because people died and I inherited them. And I still like, I don't know how to wear them because I always feel like, oh my God, what am I going to wear this? Or what am I going to wear this to? And I try to incorporate into my outfits because I'm like, oh, my sister was so good at picking out outfits. Like, she would make everything look good. And we had totally different body types. And she was 5'2 and I'm 5'4. But like, she would make things look good where I put it on. I mean, I look stupid, but she would look really good. And so.
Sure, you don't look stupid, by the way. Just like a. Don't well, edit that yeah. out. Keep that in. Rachel, I'm sure you don't look stupid wearing the stuff. I'm sure you look gorgeous.
If you saw a photo of my sister, I call her like a klepto in my closet. Like 100%. She was a klepto with my stuff. And that was one of the like funny, not funny things going through her stuff when she passed away. The amount of my stuff in her stuff. And stuff we feel like this is where that went. Stuff that we fought about that she denied having, like,
oh my God.
Found it in her stuff. And I was just like, I don't know who gets the last laugh with this. Like, I don't know.
With my dad's stuff, it's funny. I'm thinking about one tie specifically that I really wanted. This is like a book's worth of backstory that I won't give, but I'm writing the book as to like, I never actually got to go through all of my dad's clothes when he died for a lot of different reasons, but not my choice. I specifically requested and was grateful to receive one particular tie that dad always wore to like celebratory events. And I have a million, I think he wore it to my bat mitzvah, like a million pictures of him wearing this particular tie. It was his favorite. And I have it in my closet right next to all those silk scarves. And I don't wear it, but I look at it and I touch it all the time. And when my brother got married, I brought it with me. I brought it with me like in my purse and I surprised my brother with it to just like show him. It's kind of 80s Aww. And too wide. So like he wouldn't actually wear it right now. But like I like brought the tie and he was like, oh my God, it's dad's tie. Cause he would have so worn that to the rehearsal dinner or whatever. So even though I'm not like wearing it, it's still there. Like it's one way that I remember him, you know?
Yeah, I've kept a couple of my dad's button downs and flannels and thank God it's trendy right now because like the oversized look is very in. So I do have a couple like the ugliest flannels I have are my dad's, but I wear them and they're just so soft and you wear them on a bad day. You know, you wear them when like the world's crushing me, but you feel safe in it.
I love that. I love that. Yes. Keep the oversized trends going. I wear a lot of everyone's dead in my family, as I'm sure you read. But my grandmother's on both sides, real fashionistas, and so I have like really cool clothes of theirs. And my Nana on my mom's side, she had a rainbow of blazers, and she was 5'1". I am 5'8". She was 5'1" on a good day. Her blazers, though, were mostly from the 80s and like very and 70s, but like the boxy cut was in then too. And so I've been wearing so many of my Nana's blazers. And I'm like, yes, let me rock this. It's so cute. And then I get to talk about her, you know? It's just so – it's the little things. These little things help keep our people alive. I love that.
Yeah. I have two fur coats from my grandma, and fur coats are not in my wheelhouse of style. And I've put them on, and I'm like, I don't know when I would wear this. But I've kept them because it's like – it's the only clothes I have of my grandma's. But I'm like, one of them is definitely real. One of them I don't know if is real. And it's like, I feel bad, like this is a very soft animal, but then I'm like, it's already gone. It's not like I bought it. I don't know, but I just have it. I'm like, I don't know when I'm actually going to wear this out.
Do you want my advice on this one? Because my mom was from Montreal. And so there was a really fancy fur coat of hers that my dad kept in storage down here in North Carolina for literally decades because he didn't know what to do with it. And then one day he was like, you need to deal with this coat, and like decided to really keep it. And I felt guilty. And I don't know, I didn't want to get rid of it.
Yeah.
And I had it, the furrier, because that's a word, the furrier that had kept it in storage. They have a service because the new generations don't want any of these fur coats. I heard a coat created into, or what's the right word? Like cut into pillows, like six pillows and earmuffs and a headband that I and I gave my brother two of the pillows. I have some of the pillows. I wear the earmuffs all the time in the winter. I'm just telling you.
Oh.
And then I get to remember her, and I'm never going to wear a raccoon fur floor length coat.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. I did think we would be talking about all these clothes and all, and my mom's fur coat. I'm like loving this conversation.
That is amazing. I thought for a second you're going to say move to Montreal. And I was like, me and Kendall do want to visit Montreal and Quebec.
Come anytime. You are welcome. There are some bad bitches who wear fur coats in Montreal still. But like not that many. That's a lot of faux fur.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, me and Kendall want to visit for sure. I see so many photos of like old Quebec City during Christmas.
Yeah.
And you know, if you have people die, you don't like the holidays. So we've been trying to figure out like maybe we'll do a trip one year and like go somewhere because the holidays suck.
Ma'am. So I was in Montreal for the holidays. The holidays do suck. I think they suck differently for me every year. This year was really interesting because I was single. I'll say like unmarried. I was talking to a guy. I'll say that.
Yeah.
But I was officially single, and my brother and sister-in-law had just had this baby, and my sister-in-law's family came into town, and we were in Montreal. And the holidays this year were, I just felt like I didn't have a place there sometimes.
I get that.
Yeah, it's like my parents are gone. My brother has this new family, and it's not that I'm not welcomed. Of course, I'm welcomed, but the holidays are really hard when you're grieving somebody. You wonder, like, who are you now that you don't have your person to connect with in the same ways? So, oh my God. But I was in Montreal. It was freezing cold and beautiful. But I said, you know, next year I want to be in like a tropical place for the holidays that just opt out of all of it.
Well, as someone that lives in California, like white Christmas is something that like is very magical in my head. I haven't ever experienced it. My sister lived in New York for a while and she told me white Christmas, like let's go experience that. And we never got to before she passed away. But I went there one time and I went for 2 weeks and I went with a friend and I ended up spending Christmas with her family just to like get to be in New York for 2 weeks and get a white Christmas. There was no snow. There was no snow and I was very upset and I was like, I did this all for my sister and like I ended up spending Christmas with my friend and like it was one of those things where like they were so nice and welcoming, but it still felt like this isn't how I want to spend Christmas either.
100%.
But they were so nice and they were so welcoming and I was just like, I did this because I was trying to feel connected to my sister and it didn't really work out, but it was still nice and I still had a great time in New York. New York like brings me closer to my sister, but yeah, it definitely was one of those times where I was just like, I need to figure out what Christmas is, but I don't know that it'll ever be figured out exactly.
It'll probably be different every year, right? And like,
yeah,
I think if you want a white Christmas, you can come be in Montreal at my place next year. I won't be there with you unless my brother and sister-in-law decide to have another winter baby, which would be so rude of them. But you can, have the white Christmas.
We're going to tell them, like, just get pregnant again so that Rebecca will be there.
No. I told them no. I said, please schedule your baby around more convenient weather for me next time. Because, of course, I'm going to go help. Oh my God, like talk about other layers of grief, like being an aunt and experiencing this new baby and this new life. And when I look at him, I see my dad's eyes. Mm-hmm. And then I see like, well, at least his eyes shape, but I see my mom's colored eyes. Like it is wild. It is a type of grief. I'm getting goosebumps. I've just never experienced. And it is beautiful and like it fills my soul and it was so emotionally hard. It was just all of the above. That's what I've been doing for the past 2 months is holding a gigantic, you know, 12-pound at birth baby and thinking about my parents and just like crying every day. But it's beautiful and wonderful too. It's all.
That's grief, right? It's like beautiful.
The thoughts of that our parents will never be grandparents. Like that is such a tough pill to swallow at times when your friends start having kids and you get to see their parents get like evolve into that next stage of life and how excited they are to be a grandparent. And then you kind of like look around and you're like, what the hell? Like this sucks.
I'm jealous as fuck. I'm super jealous.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, cool. We got to think about what my parents would have been called as grandparents. Like we thought through that because I'm telling the baby about Grandpa Mark and my mom's name was Susan, but her nickname was Moose. Also a long story. It's actually a compliment. She would wear Canadian. She would wear her hair in like high pigtails and my dad said it looked like antlers. And so called her Moose and it stuck. And so we decided she would totally be Nana Moose. So Nana Moose and Grandpa Mark and like talking about them, telling the baby like how much they would have loved him, how much they do love him, showing him pictures. Like, yeah, I'm pissed they're not here. That sucks. And I still get to bring them into the space. And so does my brother. And there's something so beautiful about like just imagining what their grandparent names would have been that helped me feel. It's not better. Like, it's not like my grief. I don't use the word healed when I talk about grief.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to heal. Like, my parents are going to stay dead. I will never be healed from that.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they're not coming back. But, like, I feel more full when I am processing my grief and talking about my grief. That makes me full is the only word I can really think of.
Yeah. That's how we say it is like the grief will always suck and always be there, but you have to make your life feel more full for it to feel less big and less major in your life. But yeah, it's always a work in progress. And like me and Kendall still cry pretty much every episode. Like,
as you should.
Yeah, I cry on my free time. Like it's just, there's tears, you know.
I cry in my free time. Me too, Rachel. Me too. We all do. We're big feelers. My therapist says I'm supposed to watch happier things in my downtime and maybe happier things in my downtime. So I'm just saying.
That's a Kendall
thing. Trash TV, you know.
We have a book club and I pick like the romantic books that have like a grief element in there and Kendall goes like into the dark griefy elements and it's like it's a good balance, but I'm like, where's the love interest? When do they fall in love? When is there a happy moment? It's here
happy ending.
Yeah,
it's not how grief works. No happiness, but it's I get it.
Emily Henry works and that's how Gus works. So
I love that. I love that y'all do a book club. I knew that. I'd seen that. I think that's awesome.
It's been fun, but it is funny. You can see like the big differences in me and Kendall's selections of where our grief goes and how we deal with it.
There's no wrong answer, right?
Yeah,
like I think also the pendulum swings. Like sometimes I just need to feel fucking sad. Sometimes I need to cry.
Yeah.
We are entering, we're kind of in it, my grief low season. Which is funny because I think about it as like my grief is at an all-time high, but like I'm at my lowest, if that makes sense. So I call it my grief low season, but it's high grief. Anyway, these months are the worst time of year for me, hands down. My dad's birthday is coming up February 23rd. His death anniversary is March 14th. My mom's birthday is April 23rd. Jewish holidays like Passover happen during this time of year, which is my favorite. I love that holiday. And so it feels like shit because my dad's not here, right? So it's like the beginning of the year is always the hardest for me. And March Madness, right? Beautiful, fun, also makes me think of my dad. So I feel like crying and watching sad things and reading sad things way more during my low season that I'm like, let me just go be in a hole for a while, you know?
I feel like we have similar seasons. My birthday's on the 25th of this month.
Oh my God, happy early birthday.
Thank you. But my sister passed away on the 16th and my mom passed away on the 19th. So that was messed up of them, like right before my birthday.
That's so rude.
Yeah. I still like would like to know why. And it was after my brother's birthday. I feel like that is like a big contention for me is like it was right after my brother's birthday and then like before mine, like both of them. And then my mom's brother also died in that same timeline. It just, I don't know the reasoning. And if I could just like have someone ask them directly. I would like to know. And then
what is it about February?
Yeah. Like, what is it about February? And what is it about right before my birthday? Like, I am trying to enjoy my birthday, but you keep dying. So, and then my, and then my sister's birthday is March 17th. So St. Patrick's Day. So it is like a lot in that season.
We have the same grief season. Yeah. When's your grief season, Kendall?
Mine's, well, October, I would say the month of October, but my dad's birthday was also in March. So kind of like both of the transitional seasons.
And my dad died in October. So,
okay. Okay. So, just a grief just a lot, year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Multiple times in the year.
So that's obviously not true, right? Like I love, it's funny. I wonder if y'all get this too. I will tell people if I'm like meeting someone new at a party or meeting someone like out or whatever. I love the look on their face when I'm like, oh yeah, I run a grief company. I teach people about grief for a living. And I'll get a response, like a weird look, or I'll get, I love it when they say it out loud, that they're like, oh, but you seem happy. Like you seem like a normal person. And I'm like, well, I think I've always been a high energy person. I've always been enthusiastic. Like this is like me to my core. And I think post the deaths of both of my parents, post my divorce, I don't think we've even like, did we say that out loud? Maybe at the beginning that I am also divorced. It's also part of my grief journey.
I don't think yet, but.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. All of those things don't make me like less of who I am. They don't. They haven't destroyed my happiness. My grief hasn't made me a sad person. However, I know what it is like to have my grief just be a part of who I am. I can get sad. I can get really, really sad. And I know what that feels like. And because I know what those really low days feel like, I think if anything, I appreciate the wonderful days even more. I feel like I have more joy in my life now because of all of this chaos that I've unfortunately experienced way too early, that everyone else will experience over the course of their lives. We just had it front loaded, y'all. Good for us.
I love the way you said that. And I think it's something that like me and Kendall have more recently been more proactive about our grief. And it hasn't that it's something that I haven't been happy throughout the years, but I don't think I was focused as much about being my happiest. Like I wasn't necessarily like controlling my grief or like even talking about it, honestly, which is weird now. You see us and we're talking about grief all the time, but we didn't talk about it. And so it's been a huge year of processing. And I think this is the year that I'm really trying to prioritize happiness and what do I actually want from life? And how do I like become the leader of my life again, instead of letting grief lead my decisions or just like letting it happen. So it's been a big year of that. And also like you said, you're this person that's always stayed that happy person. And that's who I've been too, but I think I have dropped down a little bit. And also the truest form of my personality, because the people that I was most comfortable with are gone. And I haven't realized until recently how much of that I don't express because they're gone. And so that's something that like I'm trying to work on getting back. It's just like who I was most comfortable, that's like who I'm trying to be again. And like it's nice seeing that like you have been doing it, because I feel like that's still something that I'm like trying to transition back of like, how do I be that person again? Or like, how do I feel like that again?
Can I offer you my 2 cents on that? Are you open to it?
Yeah.
Grief is your roommate forever. And it's not that grief runs your life or that you run grief's life, right? Like you can't. Yeah. Grief is going to sit side by side with you. Grief is going to fucking be there when you don't want grief to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the work that we do in our grief is learning how to sit with it, to just let it be our roommate, that like I cannot overpower it. I've learned over time to make space for my grief in ways that don't destroy me in the moment. Mm-hmm. Like I know what it feels like to like stop and take a breath and think about my dad or let the feelings be and then, you know, get back to work or whatever I've done to like take a break and then get back to it. In the old days, in my policy, like hustle girl boss era, I just would have told you, no, I'm in control. I don't have time to be feeling sad about my mom's death. So many years ago, I'm like, I need to be happy, bubbly person. Let me pretend like my marriage is fine and I'm going to stuff it all away. I don't feel that way anymore. It's like, it's all just a part of who I am. And I am enough.
I definitely felt like I was doing what you were doing before of just like stuffing it down and thinking like being afraid of like if I cried, was that wrong? Or like if I'm still crying. And I now I'm very much like I will openly say that I cry. And before I used to like not say that or like be afraid to be like, oh, I'm crying. And everyone's going to be like, you're sad. Well, like, yeah, it is freaking sad. And some days it just feels sadder. And in moments, it feels sad, but I just let myself feel sad and I keep moving because that's life. And, you know, I still want to live a really good life. But before, I think I was very afraid of like admitting that I had bad days or that I was sad or like
totally
not handling it perfectly. But there's no perfect way to handle it. So, yeah, it's definitely been a journey to like knowing that it's always going to be there and figuring out like how can I be the best that I can be even though it's always there.
We call it like releasing the grief steam. We have a support group. And she was like talking about the person she lost. She's getting kind of choked up. And we're all like, it's okay. You can cry. Like, this is grief group. Like, this is the whole point of what we do is we cry together. And she's like, no, it's okay. I just needed to like let it out a little bit. And she's like, I'm good now. She's like, I just have to like let out the pressure a little bit. And then she's like, and I've thought about that ever since she said that of like, I would be like a shaken bottle of Coke with my grief. Just like hold it in until literally it would take me out like a whole day. I'd like a whole day gone just because I like decided, oh, I gotta keep it in and keep it locked in and don't express it. And now just like the little like, just like turn the dial a little bit, let the grief out. And I'm like, okay, like I gave it its moment. I gave it its attention. I shed my tears and I can still go on with my day. It's not detrimental to like my life anymore as much as it used to be.
I'm obsessed with this. I love that like letting a little bit of the steam out. When I give talks to businesses about how to create more grief-informed workplaces, one of the things that I push on is people who say like, I can't possibly, you know, grieve at work. I can't possibly like have feelings related to my losses that are totally separate from work. I need to be productive and I need to focus when I'm at work. People will say, well, I can't, if I make any space for my grief at work, if I cry for a second, if I like step outside to, you know, feel whatever is pressing, I will be overwhelmed. I won't be able to stop sobbing and I won't be able to go back into what I was supposed to do. And I think that's not true. I just don't think that's true. Yeah. I call it the floodgates argument. So that people are like, oh, if I let a little bit of my grief out, then it's going to flood me. I don't buy that. I think we have the capacity to go into the bathroom for 5 minutes if we need to before that meeting or whatever and go feel our feelings just a little bit to let some of that pressure out. And then we can go back into our meeting and it's okay. Or we can talk to a colleague and say like, ooh, it's been a rough day. Do you want to go grab coffee with me? Could you? And I'll be like, yeah, of course. Make the space. Like we're so afraid of making any space for our grief that we try to keep it all away. And then we're a bottle of Coke and shaken up.
Yeah. I think that's also an indicator if you can't do that, that it's like when you're doing like the shake and Coke thing. And I used to do that too, where I was so like ashamed of saying that I was sad or feeling sad that like, I would just then like maybe listen to like some of my mom's voicemails or something just to like break down and cry, you know, just to let it out. And then I'd feel so much better. But it was because I was like not dealing with that at all that I feel like that's when you're really avoiding it, right? You're not actually sitting with your feelings that like maybe you can because you've been hiding for so long. Yeah. But I feel like if you're dealing with it, then yeah, you just like let it out a little bit. So I think it's like a good indicator. Like if you're not doing that, then you probably need to be sitting with your grief a bit more and stop avoiding what you're actually feeling.
I love that. I love that you listen to your mom's voicemails. It's really sweet.
I'm so glad I have them. Like I wish I had my sister's. I don't know how I accidentally deleted them. And I'm like, damn it. But my mom's the only ones that I have. So, or Apple's automatic delete or something, or I don't know, after getting like the bajillionth Apple iPhone, you lose.
I downloaded my dad's voicemails and a couple of my grandma's to my computer, like my favorite ones for this exact reason. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, I don't want them to go away.
Yeah, I can't recall my sister's voice all the time. And that's something that sucks. And so, like, I have my mom's voice, so that's nice. I'm going to change topic so I don't keep crying.
Well, I wanted to touch back to the workplace and grief, because I think that's how we first found you, was looking at your content online around workplace grief. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't even think about this being such an issue I was dealing with for the past 5 years. And then to see that, like, you're taking this on head on, and like someone is trying to do something about it, because you don't realize it until you've lost somebody that you think, wow, probably one in every two people in the office right now has lost somebody and have gone through the same grief-like feelings as me. And yet nobody's talking about it. And so do you mind like sharing more about that work and the advocacy and the education that you're doing there?
Oh my gosh, yeah. And thank you for the compliment. I'm so glad that that's how you found Grief Leave, and that's how you found like this angle of grief support. I think like the first thing that I'll say is I didn't have bereavement leave when my dad died.
Oh my God.
And now that is not the case for state employees anymore in North Carolina, thanks to the advocacy of our organization. Now state employees in North Carolina do have bereavement leave. We're working on getting teachers bereavement leave next. When my dad died, I was at work when I learned that my dad died.
Oh my God.
Every single one of my colleagues was there. It was actually first day of COVID lockdown, and I was with all, you know, the top leaders in our state figuring out how we were going to shut down schools and go into lockdown. So my boss, my boss's boss, the governor, everybody was there. And for me, it just became very clear that my grief and my work were no longer ever going to be inseparable. Like, they were just kind of one and the same. Every single person that I worked with closely saw me on the worst day of my life, all of them. So for me, it's like a really extreme experience of like, I could never just show back up to work and pretend like I was better after taking some leave. For the average person, you get 3 to 5 days of bereavement leave, and then you go back to your 9 to 5, you go back to work, and no one talks to you about your loss at all. If you're lucky, you'll get a card, maybe signed by your colleagues. But otherwise, grief isn't seen as being something that is workplace appropriate to talk about. And unfortunately, that creates a dynamic where you can feel so isolated when you go back to work and you're like, everyone knows I was gone. Everyone knows that this loss happened, and no one's talking about it. That makes you feel invisible. Or maybe they're just avoiding you altogether because they're scared of saying the wrong thing. So that is a big effort that we lead in doing trainings with companies worldwide, small, large, you name it, on how to just teach people how to interact with each other when they're grieving, and how to advocate for yourself in making yourself vulnerable enough to like ask a colleague to coffee, like I mentioned earlier, as an example, if you're having a rough day. That requires you to be a little more vulnerable. But grief is workplace appropriate. I think that is the bottom line. Mm-hmm. And I think as a society, we are moving in that direction. Not to get political.
But it's like,
I was about to say.
Maybe we were before.
Well, a lot of my talks have been under DEI initiatives in global businesses. And now I'm
also
literally
a thing
like.
In the past, apparently.
I'm like, I just wonder what those talks are going to look like in the future, and if that's going to change, if our like what falls under the umbrella of DEI, grief shouldn't. Grief is just, to me, that's just HR. That is just like how we interact with people. It shouldn't be a diversity, equity, inclusion initiative, because Kendall, you said one out of every two people in your office, you know, may have experienced something. Everybody in your office has experienced grief of some kind. It might not have been an acute loss of a parent that week, but everyone has experienced a loss of some kind. If we keep treating our workplaces like that's not true, people will keep quitting in those workplaces, and it is economically inefficient. So we can train for that, and I hope that that stays true in this DEI-phobic world. because grief should be separate.
Absolutely. I love all of that. I think that is so relevant. And we work in such a different landscape now with our work environments. But same thing, I lost my dad during COVID too. So I was not well equipped on how to talk about it because I was so young and I didn't know, is this appropriate to even share? Like, I didn't even know if I could even tell my supervisors, hey, I need to take my bereavement leave. I don't even know what it was at the time. I was just like, I'm taking time off regardless. Which,
hope I get paid. Yeah.
And they were so great. Don't get me wrong. My supervisors were wonderful about making sure I got through because I was also, you know, I think something else Rachel and I have talked about in the past was that it's not like your grief ends in 5 days. It's not like it ends after 3 days of bereavement leave. And then we were talking with the co-founders of the death book and they're like, if you're an executor, this goes on for months, like
years. It can go on for a year and a half is some of the average timeline.
It was a damn near part-time job for me.
For sure.
And meanwhile, you're doing your full-time job. Like it was so much to juggle and you can't get that done in 3 to 5 days.
No, of course you can't. And then it's like, okay, wait, I have two thoughts and I don't want to forget. I want to come back to the virtual work environment thing and how we can create space for grief in virtual workplaces. So put a pin in that. We'll come back. Bereavement leave is for the immediate aftermath of a death. It is designed shittily to give you time in theory to go attend a funeral. It is not at all a policy that is designed with actual humanity in mind and any actual understanding of the logistics of what the process of the logistical process of a death is and what the emotional experience of a death is. So you can't take bereavement leave, for example, on your father's death anniversary the next year. But that is grief that you are still feeling acutely related to a death a year after the death. But it doesn't count, right? Bereavement leave policies don't count that way. You'll take what? Vacation leave? That's weird. You'll take maybe sick leave? Okay. But it's our bereavement policies should be broader for grief overall. They shouldn't just be limited to a direct family member, quote unquote, because there are other people in your life that maybe didn't give birth to you that are just as important when they die that you need time to take off to go focus on those feelings. But yeah, it's like the long-termness of grief. It keeps going even though your leave ends. Yeah. So that's one thing I wanted to say. Okay, the remote work environment. When I train businesses and I'm doing these sessions sometimes on Zoom, I'll specifically give advice to people who are working remotely of should I send an email or a Slack DM or a Teams message to my colleague that I know is grieving? What feels most appropriate? Should I call them? And my answer to all of those is usually yes, if you feel like you should reach out to your colleague, even if you work remotely, acknowledge their loss. But it's I give advice on how managers can put intentional language in emails that they send to their teams. How do you announce that a colleague has lost someone? How do you do that really thoughtfully with permission of the person who lost someone? There's a lot to think about there. What does it look like to give a colleague who lost somebody a gift? Is it a DoorDash gift card? Is it something everyone can pool together? So there are a lot of considerations we can think about for remote work and that it's just a different way to support each other through grief. We can still do it.
Yeah. I find that I have a very low tolerance for office politics now because everything people do that's so backstabby and conniving, I'm like, my family's dead. What are you doing? and it's so hard to avoid that where people, sometimes I'm like, you're being rude about this or you are doing this or that. And I just want to be like, everyone's dead. What are we doing here? And it's really hard that I don't know that I'd ever love that experience again, just because there's always going to be people that are so fakely corporate that I have a hard time because I feel like when you've dealt with so much real shit, it's really hard to want to give time to people that are openly fake and mean, just not a good person. And it's really hard, but that's what's celebrated in so many spaces is just being that openly fake but corporate person. And I have a really hard time with that because I'm just this is our life and you're choosing to be that. Like you have one chance and you're choosing to be that person, that like fake mean person. It just is really hard for me to digest, in which I'm like, I don't know that I could ever really go back.
It sounds like a rough work environment for sure. And you're reminding me of what it was like to go back to work, like the months, maybe like post-COVID, I would get an email that was marked urgent. And I would read the email and I'd be like, this is not fucking urgent.
Yeah, is this urgent?
You know what was urgent? Like the call that my dad was dead was fucking urgent. And it just like, it skews
It's really
everything.
Hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
It really does. So speaking of that, like you took a year long sabbatical. How close to after your dad passed away did you decide to do that? And what made you decide to be like, I'm going to take a year long sabbatical? Because I think that is actually perfect. I wish I had done some like, what's that movie? Like Peace, Love. What is it? Like
Eat, Pray, Love.
Eat, Pray, Love. Like I wish I had done that after. I feel like if I would have settled in a place sooner, if I just kind of like, I don't know, put my feet in sand and just like stayed on the ocean for a little bit. So when I saw that, I was like, that's amazing. I definitely should have done that. But like what inspired you to actually go do that?
So first of all, just like disclaimer, I am not recommending that everyone quit their jobs and just like go leave and go wander for a year. What a privilege that I was able to do that and that I had the resources to be able to do that. Not even close to everybody can. And that is bullshit. And that speaks to the inadequacies of our bereavement leave policies in America and also globally. I feel very fortunate that I was in a position to evaluate, like, did I feel like I could keep moving forward with my life as it was at that time? In the year after my dad died, year and a half after my dad died, I was leading COVID response for the state of North Carolina for all of our public schools and private schools eventually, and leading all of our early childhood COVID response work, really high pressure, high impact job. My marriage was also falling apart. And it had been falling apart before all of those things happened, but I kept trying to like push through. But when both of your parents are dead, I don't know, it changes your perspective on a lot of things. And for me, it really lowered my bullshit tolerance. And I was like, why am I trying to make this marriage still work? And nothing will tell you your relationship isn't working than being stuck in lockdown together. Because man, all of your problems are just staring at you in the face. And so by December 2021, I was living alone for the first time. I had my two doggies. I was exhausted from grief, from work, from the extra grief of ending my marriage, even though it was my choice, still came with its own grief. And I just knew that something had to really drastically change in my life. I could not muster the energy to keep getting out of bed and going through the same work routine that I was going on. And I felt incredibly overwhelmed. I think depression like really took over. I was in a really dark place. And I knew I needed to take some time off. Oh, I got shingles, which I don't recommend.
Way to put like salt in the open
wound. Yeah. That was in November of 2020. That was the same year my dad died. I was on FMLA for that. And that's the only time I'd ever taken time off in my life. And it was actually like, it planted the seed for me that I could take my foot off the gas pedal and I wasn't a complete failure for taking care of myself. And that, all of that put together by the end of 2021, I was like, what if I took some time? What if I explored these feelings of grief that I know are here, but I don't really know how to talk about and I have never really named as grief and I don't know how to grieve. I don't know what any of those things mean. And so I decided to start this project and spend a year trying to answer that question. What does grieving mean and what is grief? And that year-long sabbatical included a blog, included a lot of really interesting conversations, interesting travel, interesting writing, and to have it all eventually become what Grieve Leave has become as a company, as this like worldwide org, it is wild to me. And it speaks to how much we need to create space to talk about grief of all kinds, death, non-death, particularly for young people. Yeah, that's how it started.
love that you like shared the inspiration of this, because I think that's so relatable to not only, I mean, think Rachel and I, but to our listeners as well. What feedback have you gotten back from the people that you've helped through the program and all the different like aspects and avenues of Grieve Leave?
Oh my gosh. So it's been, I'm in year 3 now of Grieve Leave as a company. The feedback is constant. Right? Like, it's just so, like, every comment is feedback, every DM is feedback, every training that I give where someone shares, you know, some takeaway that they've had about how they are now thinking about talking to a colleague that they hadn't planned on talking to before about their loss, or a boss, a manager who is going to approach conversations with their employees differently, a company that is changing their bereavement policies, the state of North Carolina changing their legislation to allow bereavement leave. All of those things bring me such a sense of, like, it's fullness again, like, to come full circle on that word. It's not that it negates my grief in any way. It's not that it, like, I don't think you can turn your grief into purpose. You can't transform it into something else. But if this was going to happen to me, the least that I can do is try to create some good for other people with what I've learned along the way. I will say that talking about divorce and grief has been particularly impactful. And I think we just don't always make space for the grief that we feel when relationships end. And so often, relationships of all kinds end after the death of somebody. It can be like a really make or break experience for any kind of relationship, platonic or romantic. And Grieve Leave has created tons of spaces, educational content, grief support groups, even some business trainings talk about this too. It's like, you're allowed to grieve how your relationships change too. And you're not a failure if you lose friends or you go through a breakup. It's all just kind of these different facets of grief. But yeah, when we're on the internet, y'all, we're always getting feedback.
Yeah.
And it's a lot to handle, and I'm grateful for it. And some days people aren't always super nice on the internet, but for the most part, people are incredibly kind and appreciative. I love the work that I get to do.
That's amazing. I feel like that's where we started with this. We're obviously still smaller, but creating like a purpose of like, all this stuff happened, but like, how can we help other people? How can we do something positive with our journey? It's like, all this stuff happened and we don't have a choice with that, but we can choose like what we do next with it. And talking about it has been really helpful personally too. And just like the amount of people we've gotten to meet and have conversations with, it's been such a great journey with grief, or with our grief journey. But one thing I want to circle back to is that you mentioned your divorce and how grief can lead to divorce or just like friendship breakups. And how much, well, one, do you want to share? But two, how seeing grief, like dealing with it, I think it makes people look at people differently. Like sometimes you see people in a new light and people can really disappoint you on like a friendship level, on a romantic level. Everyone that I've dated while grieving has been a huge disappointment. Like, this is what you think is going to be helpful. And I didn't really know what was going to be helpful, but like, it wasn't that. I think it's just, it's a really weird thing. And I think back to like if I got married early, like 20s or something, that person who I would have chosen, I would have 100% probably been divorced.
Yeah.
I'm just like, who I would be looking for at that stage to like now. And I'm single now, but like, I would have 100%. There's just no way. Like, who I was even before that, like, I just, it's a volatile change. Like, I just can't imagine, like, me have chosen the right person that would have gone me through that. So can you share a little bit more about your experience or whatever you're comfortable sharing about that?
Oh, my God. We could talk about this quite literally forever. And I love talking about the intersections of grief and dating and then sometimes divorce, right? Like, I love thinking about this because it is so real. I'll give you like the bird's eye view of my relationship and my marriage and my divorce. We met when we were 22 in Teach for America. He also had lost a parent young. At that point, my mom was the only parent I had lost. He then lost his mom as well during our relationship. And then I lost my dad as well during our relationship. So it's like we both were in this place of having two dead parents by the age of 30, which just should not happen. I think that the things that made me feel seen by him as a 22-year-old, really deeply understanding what it felt like to lose a parent, overpowered the things that were not good from day one in that relationship. And at that point in my life, I just really wanted to be understood. And I think the older that I've gotten, I realize I just need to understand myself incredibly well and pick a partner that, like, first of all, I don't need a partner. I would like a partner. I have a partner now. He's lovely. that's new. We're exclusive. Thank you. Or if that's not on the internet yet. But anyway, he's wonderful. But my grief is a part of our relationship. He also has been through divorce, so he understands, like, that grief in itself. My ex-husband and I were probably going to get divorced at some point in time. Maybe if my dad hadn't died, but all that said, like, maybe I just would have stayed in it because I really wanted to be a good daughter and I had an image of what I thought that relationship could be. When both of my parents were dead, I was like, the person I am accountable to is me. I have to take care of myself. And I decided to end the marriage, and it is the best decision I've ever made in my entire life, hands down. Dating after that has been fascinating. And I will just say, like, if someone can't handle your grief, like if someone doesn't know how to engage with you about your grief, even after you give them some gentle feedback or they're not like curious enough to go, I don't know, read up on grief and loss, that is not the person for you. Period. Grief is a part of the relationship. It just is, right? My dad's death anniversary is coming up, and the guy I'm seeing now, like, he knows he'll be coming to the cemetery with me. That's going to be a big step in our relationship, right? Like, my ex-boyfriend, I dated a guy for one serious relationship after my divorce. Grief was a part of what he knew made me me. There are a lot of reasons why that didn't work out. Anyway, I have a million and one piece of advice, pieces of advice on, like, grief and dating, and I've written about that. So I can be helpful. You just let me know.
We can link back to that.
I'll share that piece.
I don't think people talk about it enough because it is something that really makes you evaluate everything. And I was dating someone last year and I tried to share, totally nice guy, but it's just like there wasn't that. It's like if I'm sharing this with you, this huge piece of me, like I shouldn't feel like there's nothing, you know, like it's just like there's nothing bridging that.
What did he do? Can I ask? Like, how did
he? For example, for one thing, like I had a roommate before and she was moving out and I was supposed to go visit him. But I was just like, there's too much going on and it's going to be my mom's birthday and the holidays are coming up. Like, there's just so much going on right now. Can you come here instead? Like, I'll book your ticket. You come here. And he just was like, oh, I've been flying a lot. I don't feel like flying. And we talked about it later and he like apologized for it coming off like that. But I was like, if I'm telling you it's like my mom's birthday, the holidays are really hard for me. Like there's so much big changes. Like, can you just come here and I'll pay for it because you've been coming here. It just felt so dismissive.
Yeah.
And he apologized for it. But that was just like a clear light of like, we're not on the same page. Because if I'm telling you all those things and your response is like, oh, I feel like flying right now. Like, I've been flying a lot. And he didn't mean it in any bad way, but
short flight. It's not even a long flight.
But I'm like, his response should have been something more like, Rachel, oh my God, like, thank you for telling me how you're feeling.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I know this is such a tough time of year. Like, let's talk about your mom or let's talk about whatever. Yeah. And then, like, let's talk through what logistics can be. Like,
yeah. It was not any of that.
The immediate shutdown is never going to work. That's
It was not like that. And he just was like, I get it. That's okay. But I was like, that's all? That's the conversation?
It's got to be reflective. No.
And so I was just like, would I have cared maybe even like 2 years ago? I probably would have been like, oh, that's fine. You know, because I just wasn't prioritizing my own grief feelings as much or like what I expected from somebody. But in that case, I was like, no. And And it's also helped, like, meeting other guys in this space and having good conversations with them where they can actually talk about their feelings. Mm-hmm. I was like, so they are capable. There are, it's out there. It's just not you. And very kind guy, very nice guy. Like, we're still cool. Just not my guy and not the guy that I need.
I think it's beautiful to be cool and friends with an ex. I don't really know what that's like because I've never really experienced that. But it's like going out with nice guys. I've been there too. And like, yay, I love that they're kind and sweet. Can you also be present for my really dark moments? Like, can you hold it all and know that like to experience this and like my energy and my positivity and my joy is not – like, that doesn't mean you don't also have to show up for the dark times too.
Yeah.
It is I'm a full package deal. And my two cents on that is like, you can find a partner that can hold it all. And you don't need someone to help you hold it all. You can hold all of yourself. And I will only opt in to a partner who can do that too for himself. And I found one. Yeah. So yay.
Okay, well, we'll follow up where you found that.
You don't want to come to North Carolina for the dating pool. I would much rather go to San Francisco. I'm not going to lie to you. That
sounds... If you do. I don't think you do. Okay, yeah, I don't think it's better over here. But that could be a whole three-parter episode in general.
I got banned from Hinge for talking about voting. You can keep that in.
Oh, my God.
It's true.
I can't even be on apps anymore. I don't think – I don't think I have it in me.
Okay. I will say this too. You can quote me. I think when you've experienced like significant loss early in your life, it means that a partner that you pick has to be able to hold that kind of loss too alongside with you, right? And that probably means they're a little older than you. Like, at least in my experience, I have found myself more able to relate and connect with guys who are a little bit older because they have had more life experience, like a normal amount of life experience for someone their age.
Yeah.
And I'm 35. I'm not going to knock the women who go out with much, much older guys, right? Like, do whatever makes you happy. But for me, guys who are in their 40s is my. That has been so much more successful, quote unquote, for me, because I feel like they have lost people in their lives. Maybe they have been divorced. They have, you know, had multiple jobs, lived multiple places. And I think that us as younger women, when we've experienced loss early on, we're like trying to connect with guys or people who just haven't, they don't have that maturity yet that has been forced upon us. And yeah, date older. That's my advice.
I'm 36, so I'm like, should I?
Stop. I assumed you were like 20.
I know. She looks good, huh? She looks so young.
Look at us.
It's a 75% being Filipino.
ma'am, you should only be dating people in their 40s at least.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind. I've dated like later 20s in my age, and no.
No. I think 42 is the perfect age for a man. And before then, no. And after then, I don't know.
I'm taking your advice because I'm like, I'm still in my 20s, but I'm like, the scene is bad.
Where do you live, Kendall?
I live in DFW.
Texas.
Oh, we didn't even talk. I taught in Fort Worth.
Oh my God.
So I lived in Fort Worth for 2 years, Dallas for 2 years.
Oh my God.
Texas connection.
Lots of people in cowboy hats that you can be with, and
a lot of cowboys.
I want to introduce you to my wonderful friend Zenib, who was on Love is Blind, who has in the Dallas season, whom I connected with because she also has two parents who are gone. And she and I did a podcast episode. You should so go listen to it. Not that long ago, because her sister got married not long after my brother got married. And we talked about what it was like to be at our siblings' weddings while neither of us were married at the time. And like what that felt like to like not have parents and be there to support our siblings during this like beautiful moment that is also a little bit bittersweet too. She's amazing and I love her. And she can so talk to you about the Dallas-Fort Worth dating scene.
I would love to meet her.
Yeah.
I feel like Kendall would do well with an older soul or like an older.
Do it.
For sure. She has an older soul. Watch. We'll see who I end up. I don't know. It doesn't even sound appealing right now after that like situation. I'm like,
I'm so sorry. But it's also like there's something around Valentine's Day, right? Like depending on when this episode comes out, like talking about love and grief and dating is so real. And I think that y'all should keep speaking up about it. I love that.
I think I might move this episode up because I just love it and I just want to like
feel like I should have a glass of wine.
Yeah. I feel like we're like all old friends already just like talking about.
This is the beautiful thing about like people in the grief space, right? Like we are all here for each other and I don't know, like the market's not saturated. Like we need everyone's voice. We need your perspectives. Like each of you brings your own unique story to the conversation. We so need you. But like really, I love talking about dating and grief. It's like it's fascinating to me.
I honestly, we did like one episode on it, but I feel like we should honestly do another one because I don't think we talked enough about just how much you need to reconsider how you date when you grieve. And like I've been so many like Facebook support groups. I don't really post in there, but I'll just read.
We all are. Yeah.
So many times people will be like, my husband told me to get over it. My husband told me to stop or whatever. And I'm like, I don't even want to date if that's like what everyone's experiencing.
That's absurd. That is not what it has to be like. It just doesn't. Like, I think like the key takeaway is you learning how to show up for yourself helps you then attract someone who is more aligned to what you deserve. And I just, man, I've spent a lot of time in my life trying to force relationships to work. That like, if I just work harder, this can totally work. And like, I can fix him kind of mentality.
Oh God, me too.
Like it just, we can't. Yeah. They're going to be who they are and we are who we are. And either we're the right fit or we're not. And shit's going to happen over the course of our lives. And we'll either keep falling in love with each other or we won't. And that is okay.
That's so very true. My dad dealt with like severe depression growing up. And I was always, even though I'm the youngest, I was always the one like that would help him, like try to cheer him up. I would always be the family mediator. I was always the one helping. That also brought me, led me to like in dating, not go to the right guys. Cause it's like, oh, I can help you. Mm-hmm. I can fix you. I can do this. I can do that. And then I realized like, why am I trying to help people when I'm dealing my own shit? And it took me a while to just be like, stop, because they need to take care of themselves. You can still be the loving person that you are, but they have to be that loving person so that one, they receive it properly, but also they give it back to you. And that's like the harder thing. Cause it's like, I don't want to love less, but I want you to be a whole person so that we can support each other. But it took me a long time to even like acknowledge like, wow, me trying to be a fixer is a problem. And so now I know how to like support someone, but not be like the fixer. And there's like a difference. There's a line, especially when we're not dating.
I think we're, I think we have the same dating habits. Like that was so my approach. I've just like, I just loved helping. I really did.
Yeah.
But not anymore. Right. Like I am me and I'm going to show up for people when sometimes they might not want it, but I'm not going to force my way, you know, to offer help if they don't want it. But I'm going to make myself present for people who deserve support. And I'm just going to surround myself with people who can, like, who are there for it all, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm very proud of all of us and our grief and our dating lives. And yeah.
Well, I shut that down as like right after my dad passed. And I was like, I'm definitely not, I'm not a good person to myself right now, much less anybody else. But I like funneled that love and energy that I had would have poured into somebody else. And I just like reallocated it into my brother and my sister, into my friends that like literally pulled me up off the ground and were there for me in the worst of it. And even I think now, even though like the grief is atrocious and it's painful and horrible, my relationships with these people are the best they've ever been. And I think it's because I was really focusing on like making myself whole again, but pouring that love and like that gratitude I had for them for being there for me back into them. And I'd be like, you know, if I wanted to go out to a movie and I was like, this is such a perfect date night, I would take my sister or I'd take my best friend. And like, it sounds weird because we don't talk like this, but it was like, I was trying to date them and let them know that I love them and appreciated them and wanted to spend quality time. Because now when you lose people, you're like, time is a finite thing. And you want to make as many memories as you can now because you're like, I can lose these people at any moment. And that's terrifying. Like after you lose people, you're like, I've got to like make the most of my time with them and let them know that I really love them.
You said so many things that resonate. None of what you said sounded weird. Like it does not sound weird to like date your friends or date your family. Maybe sounds weird to say date your family. Okay. Never mind. Dating your friends, right? Like taking them to dinners. I love that. And taking yourself to dinner. Like go. I love sitting in a bar with a book, eating a meal, glass of wine, or writing. That is something I never would have done before my dad died and before my divorce. Period.
If only we're in the same area, I feel like we'd all love to do that.
I think this is just like, look at us. We are all across the country. Yeah. Besties. Yeah. I think we would love to sit together and do that.
We would. Yeah, I love that. Yeah, Kendall's went in a totally different route, but I think it just shows, I don't know. Kendall's just like a kind, caring person. So it just shows like the way, the route that she took. I went a little haywire in dating, but Kendall just went a very healthy approach.
But I think people do both, right? Like people either try to drown out their grief with, I don't want to say like with men, but like with all kinds of things, right? Like we try to distract ourselves. Some people do it with work. I think like the biggest advice is take a step back and invest in yourself.
That's my advice now. 100%. Because I think it's like one of those things where it's like, they say like grief is love with nowhere to go, but it's like the love that you had for them, but it's also like the love that you received, right? So it's like all this love. And one way that you can get it back is like dating, you know, like you'll get some quote unquote love. You want to like feel that where you can express that love and you can also receive love back. But when you're not ready for it, you're just not going to attract the right people. And like, it's just not going to be a good situation. Like I definitely created more drama. I'm like, I didn't even like you. Why was I upset over anything?
I didn't even like you.
I didn't even like you. And no offense to them or whatever, but we weren't compatible, you know, like, and I'm a nice, like fun person, caring person, but like, you didn't deserve even that, you know, we just like, we weren't good at all. And so I wish I had taken a step back, but it is hard when it's like, you lose so many people, you're just like, I just want to feel some type of normal. And you're like trying to do that. So yeah, I definitely didn't take Kendall's route, but it would have probably been better.
It's, I think so many of us, like even post-divorce, like we go a little crazy because we're like free for the first time. That quote you mentioned, Rachel, grief is love with nowhere to go. I historically have had such a bone to pick with that quote because while I think it is accurate for death-related grief, if you had like a good relationship with them, I like totally, my love for my dad is just pouring out of me all the time. And same for my mom, like I don't know where else to channel that to. So, okay, I hear that. For my divorce, I have grief about my divorce. Like it's not love about my ex-husband. It's not love about what I thought that relationship would be. I'm grieving a future that can never exist and might never have actually happened at all. It's just like an idealization of what I thought the marriage was. But you and the way you just framed this are helping me rethink that bone to pick that I had. Because I'm like, maybe it's about love for myself. Like maybe my divorce grief is about love for me and that I love myself enough to have ended that marriage and to be channeling that energy into like all of the feelings that come with grieving the end of a relationship. So anyway, so thank you for the way you just framed that, because I've always been like, I don't know if that quote is accurate for all forms of grief, but I actually, you've pushed my thinking on that, and I think it could be.
Yeah. Go ahead, Kendall. You're going to say something.
Oh, no, I was gonna wrap up the last part, but yeah. you go ahead. If I cut off something profound, I'm really going to be upset. Like, if you're going to say some great line.
I was just going to change the world of grief with what I was about to say. Kendall, cut me off.
We'll never know.
We'll never know. But go ahead,
I missed Kendall. The optimism. Well, Rebecca, before we wrap up, do you have any announcements or upcoming things, some breaking news you want to share with our listeners?
Aside from my dating life.
She's no longer single.
I'm no longer single. That is, yeah, just end the podcast there. You know, sorry, world.
Mic drop.
No, there will be a lot of really wonderful stuff coming out of Grieve Leave this year as we run into 2025. I think I'm really pumped for season 2 of the Griefed Up podcast. Would love to have y'all on to like talk through your grief. So stay tuned. But season one was amazing. So season 2 is coming together now, and I'm so excited to share that with the world. And Grieve Leave. Sorry, I shouldn't like laugh at my own excitement over something that's like embarrassing. We host Sad Hours instead of Happy Hours.
And, oh my God.
We will be hosting Sad Hours hopefully all over the state of North Carolina.
I thought you were going to say all over the country. And I was like, San Francisco?
Well, I mean, let's partner and let's do it. It is important. Our work in Grieve Leave is about making grief and grieving feel more relevant and accessible to people, whether that is at work or that is just hanging out with people at a bar that can all get together and you know you're there because you're grieving and you can cry if you want, but like you can also just get to know each other as people. So we host Sad Hours and they are a blast. We are hosting one in Asheville in the western part of North Carolina, really post Hurricane Helene and like in the long run what it feels like to grieve long term and start to put your life back together. So stay tuned for more information about that Sad Hour in particular. And it sounds like we're going to do a Sad Hour in San Francisco and DFW. So
yes, I would love to do that.
Oh my God. I can't wait. I truly can't wait. Thank you all so much.
This is so much fun. I honestly feel like we're all like good friends now.
We are.
This is like so fun. Like I've loved this conversation so much. Aww. Thank you so much for coming. We definitely need to just like chat again. I don't know. We can all have a book and drink wine virtually or figure out how to come together. But yeah, looking forward to the future and excited.
Grief sucks. Bye.
Grief sucks. Be careful who you date. It can suck.
I so appreciate y'all. Thank you so much for having me. What a joy.
Yeah, this was such a nice conversation. And it was very light for grief. It felt very light, even though I almost cried a few times. But it definitely was a great conversation. But that's grief. That's life. Thank you so much. Enjoy your game, Rebecca. And
thank you. Go Duke. Thanks.